Hey, did you hear about the girl who learned functional programming? Yeah, that's right. She was really good at learning it. She wrote this tight code you wouldn't believe. You may have heard of her. I wrote a story about her. It was Mary Had a Little Lambda. Hey, guys. It's Daniel Markham here at NerdRoundup, DanielMarkham.com. I'm happy to have you. If you've never been to a NerdRoundup before, I'm Fuzzy. Where am I, Fuzzy? If you've never been to a NerdRoundup before, what we do is every week sit down with some articles for that week and talk about what the nerds have been talking about over the week from a technical standpoint. We do coding, we do science, we do whatever nerds are interested in, we do it. And the reason for doing this, is teams who can relax in 3D. The reason we do this, teams that relax and have fun can do kick-ass stuff. And the only way I know to show you how to do that is just to do it. So here we are. This week we have Bob Martin, John Kern. Hey, guys. Welcome to Nerd Roundup again.
Oh, hey.
So, John, what have you been up to for the past week or so?
Ooh. Well, listening to some stuff on what we might call directed graph theory with social networks and organizational network analysis, which is kind of fascinating. And starting to work with this one client who's got, I don't know, might be a focus problem. Anyway, at least they're asking for help in the product management. And so I'm just drinking from the fire hose right now and formulating some hypotheses that maybe I should run the other direction, but I won't.
So you're doing this, huh? You're doing this all with Play-Doh. Okay.
Right.
Bob, what you been up to?
Oh, my. I've been spending an inordinate amount of time tweaking and tuning my Star Trek program. my Space War program. It written in Clojure, all gooey. It's very nice. You get to shoot Klingons and Romulans and build things. It's kind of a modernized version of a 1970s computer game. And it still feels like a 1970s computer game.
Nice.
Retro. It's retro. So the Clojure, are you doing the thing where you create a game state and then you throw the game state at the engine, it goes through the engine, it comes back, and you... A lot of guys do that.
Entirely functional, not a single variable, not a mutable variable in the thing. Yep.
Cool stuff. I have... In the last week, I did a couple of videos on programming in F#. I've also looking today at the new Haskell. They're updating Haskell to do something called linear types, which I'd never heard before, but sound really, really cool. So that's kind of been my thing. Let's get started on the stories here. Humbity. The first one, speaking of programming, C# 10 has a new feature called Caller Arguments Expression. Argument check. So the idea is that you have a class foo that calls a method bar, and you're in bar, and you want to say, hey, who's calling my method? And inside that method, you can actually go and ask the compiler who would be calling in at this time. And then if it's an expression like 7 plus x or whatever, you can say, hey, 7 plus x is supposed to be 5, but it's really 3. So you're actually having the compiler tell you the guts of the code that's calling you. What could go wrong?
This is an assault on referential transparency. You call a function, and the function decides how to respond based on who called it.
Yes. Ooh, this is like the next step of that. You could put an if then or a case statement in. Sure.
Sorry, who called me? You could pass every test this way. Which test called you?
Or you could implement standards. I'm sorry, I don't want to take Java classes calling you.
You have to ask, what response are you looking for? Yeah.
Sounds very human to me.
So riddle me this, Batman and Robin. And this is something, you know, I'm just a lowly engineer, right? And I just use stuff to get shit done. I read the early C++ tome, you know, back before Google. I actually read books. But I've often wondered, after having done things in like Ruby, which is really like, yeah, go ahead, shoot yourself a foot. I mean, okay, C is like that a lot, but C at least had a little more structure to it. But Ruby, you know, I remember the first time being exposed to, what do you mean it failed because of a typo? What's up with that, right? So So coming from Java and C and C++, that sort of concept was new to me. But then after a while, I grew to enjoy it, you know, because it's a little like, do whatever the hell you want.
Sure.
Treat me like an adult. Slap me when it's wrong, but otherwise just let me do it. And so why in God, then when I had to do Java again, I was like, what, WTF? You make me tell you what the hell I'm giving you back. You make me tell you all the freaking types that I'm giving you. You do all, you make, you, what am I, your freaking compiler? Like, why do I have to do all this? So anyway, I've often wondered from, you know, somebody who's probably smarter about languages, like, why in God's name do we do all that work telling, you know, giving the compiler all this information? Because I don't know, you can't figure it out on your own. Apparently people who write Ruby can't. But anyway, I just kind of, I've often wondered, other than speed or something like, okay, I'm sure there's a reason because we can compile, we can do this, we can do that. I'm not a language designer. But anyway.
I just think the reason Ruby is so awesome and dynamic programming in general is so awesome is because you don't have to think about stuff. And that's why it's really good for testing. You can just kind of throw stuff together and test what you want. And who cares if it's an int 32 or int 64? It works. I'm happy.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the really strong systems that use Henley Bitter, like Haskell, it, you know, it works. It's just going to work because you have everything plugged together or it wouldn't compile. It's that big, vast desert between those two where, well, just kind of give me what you know and maybe that'll help me think about it a little better than I could before. And Bob, do you want to give me the right answers?
Yeah.
Yeah, the right answer is closure.
I'm not going to learn closure till I retire.
But
so,
fine. So. That's a good thing to do.
But anyway.
Kind of Lisp, though, I mean, that is the language. Everyone will eventually be programming in Lisp. Just, it's inevitable.
Well, here's the thing, John, okay? It's not like types ever go away. Yeah, they might not tell you about the types, but the code ain't going to run unless there's some type somewhere or another going on. So,
oh, right. I get it. It's just those that force me to tell you what it is and then apparently not really help me that much because you still just puke and puke on the error. Like, anyway, it's just like I don't get a lot of return on investment for doing
this,
all that.
Yeah, this is exactly where this is coming from. So you're running a distributed system and you're your tester trying to write your tests and you've got a method somewhere and it fails and you don't know where it came from or why it's failing. You just have an assert that fails somewhere in a big system. This lets you actually output something that may be more meaningful. I don't like it, don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to explain where it's like, okay, now I know more as a tester than I did before.
Yeah, okay.
I guess eventually I have little emojis we'll send, like a smiley face and a, you know, send and frowny face, expecting smiley face.
Sometimes I'll use that in Ruby about tell me who the hell called you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the compiler does know, and there's a thing called reflection. You can ask the compiler who's calling me, what's going on. You end up doing that a lot if you want to like play around under the hood. But the thing is, you want to surface this for everybody to use because you don't really want that to be to Bob's point, you don't want that to be a common thing.
No, and to me that when I have to stoop to that level, that tells me something about all right, my code sucks. Right. If I'm that confused about how I got here, then maybe I need to do something other than, right? You know, it's used once in a while, and it always is like, don't do that.
Yeah, that's what they call it, a feature treadmill, where you write a successful system and it's good, and okay, what are you doing next year? So okay, we're adding these features, and that just kind of keeps going year after year.
Seems like that.
So. I'm going to ride my little hobby horse just for a minute or so here. I was writing did a video this week about console apps in F#. And the reason I did that, I wanted to show how the new task system works in .NET 6.0. And so I figured that would be the simplest example. And as part of that, I looked up, they actually have a Spectre.console library. And some poor guy on Stack Overflow said, hey, how do I set this up? And I looked at the code, and oh my freaking Lord, it's just... it's awful. It is just, so I felt bad when my sample code had 40 lines of code. This guy has the same amount, and I can tell you what the hell's going on if I spend a lot of time with it, but why? It's just, it is, what he's actually doing, he's pulling in types from this library and then adding to them to create a bunch of classes that he can then manipulate to use the, and a console, I mean, the reason I picked this is the simplest thing you can imagine. It starts running, it stops running. we continue to do this to ourselves. This next one, goodbye clean code.
Shut your ears, Bob.
Yes, we may have the right person for this here. And I have to admit, I didn't scan this morning. I read it. It came out a year ago. This whole thing. Who we got here? Hang on. This whole thing we have is basically about premature optimization with generalization. So he's attacking Dry because he's saying that when you use Dry to, use an abstraction to make some common code, you're actually making a decision about the problem domain. He doesn't put it in those terms, but that's what he's doing. Bob, why are you presenting?
Sorry.
I mean, if you want to show us those vacation pictures, that's fine.
The space game.
Yeah. The space game, yeah, cool. Yeah, so this guy, basically, this is a better example, but yet another example of, hey, I don't know X, so I tried X, and it sucks, so all of X sucks now. This is all with clean code. It's a drive-by.
Yeah, that's a funny pattern, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's submitted to the Babylon Bee.
we need a Babylon Bee for programs. What we need?
We do.
Like, right? A Babylon C,
maybe. Bad idea. We used to have one. Remember the obfuscated code, the weekly or the daily WTF? That was a good one.
Yeah, and there was also the funny one, like the web pages that sucked back in the early days.
Yes.
Examples of really bad web design.
And now we're joined by Scott Ambler. Mr. Ambler, you may know the Bobster and John.
I do. How's it going?
Welcome to the party.
It is a party, I can tell.
Well, you know, they were talking about we should have some sort of humor site for tech news because there's so many funny things. Do you guys remember there was a site called Expert Exchange for a while, and somebody realized that it actually spelled Expert Sex Change? It wasn't that popular after that for a while.
But the real question is, what was it about that site that made you notice it?
A young guy needed the money. I don't know. Somebody else noticed it. I've just paid attention to them.
Of course.
Yeah, that site, if I remember correctly, that you would get the question when you Googled it. It would say, okay, somebody had the question. And if you join, we'll give you the answer. But if you scrolled way down to the bottom, the answer was always there. You just had to go all the way down to the bottom. So I guess it kind of pissed people off quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for the folks that just don't know how to use Google, I guess. But anyways.
So this is a great comment series on this one. It came on last time, incidental duplication. If you guys are interested online, you can chase that down. This next story. So last week, somebody stole the FBI's credentials and started sending emails out saying they were the FBI.
Guys, the password is not password.
Please send us your username and password. You may have been compromised. Oops.
Well, what do you mean Running Man's not a good password? It's a perfectly good password.
Hey, yeah. Say what you want. I didn't get caught, so.
I would expect, Scott, that if it was you, it would have been a much more complicated and elaborate scheme than just stealing a Running Man.
Yeah, it would have been subtle.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a whole thread on how they got it. It's a certificate kind of issue. It's a sad. You know, the thing about letting government agencies keep all your data is that this happens. And you're set.
They're so technologically aware, you know.
Yeah, OPM, Office of Personnel Management, a couple years back, lost all of their millions of employees. Right? This is like security clearances for people in DOD. And the way they found out was these guys came in to demo a security app. And so the guys are doing this demo. Here's our security app. It'll check for infiltration, whatever. And they run it like, holy shit, you were infiltrated 2 years ago. Oops.
I was actually about 15 years ago, I was at a conference and somebody was demoing some sort of security penetration testing tool thingy. And the moron gets up there and he basically asks the audience, so name a company. So somebody shouts out one of the local big banks. I don't remember who it was. And so this clown brings up their website and attacks it and takes them down. Yeah, at a conference in public. That didn't go well.
No, it did not. This story did not end well for the
DDoS.
No. Think about the geek mind. It's, I think I see your problem up. The story of the executioner, right? The guillotine's not working, and they put the engineer on there, and the engineer looks up and says, hey, I think I see your problem.
Yeah, you surely lubricate that blade, There's an
excellent... Watch this, it's going to be so cool.
For people who are interested in engineering and executions, there's a book called The Executioner Always Chops Twice, which is about the long history of different ways we made to kill people we didn't like, Iron Maiden, various things. It's very macabre, but I found it interesting to read.
Good, yes.
You would think the good ones would only need to chop once, but...
Yeah, you got to have the blade and you got to hit the right way. Guillotine, best way to kill people, if you're going to do that sort of thing. It's just, it's humane, they're only conscious for a few seconds, it always works, otherwise there are a lot of other things that can go wrong.
Extremely efficient if you're having a revolution.
Well, speaking of engineers, there was a guy in ancient Sumeria, I think, who invented this bull. It was a brass bull, and he wanted to give the king something to kill people in that would be kind of really cool, I guess because he was a developer, and he said, if he could put people inside this brass bull and set it on fire, and as they scream while they're dying, it'll make bull sounds. No shit, the king went, wow, hey, you guys throw this guy in the bull. So they threw him in the bull.
You first, man.
That's right. Yeah, somebody's got way too much time on their hands. Yeah. That's what I'm hearing.
Ultimate demo. Yeah, that's a demo. You know what? That should. I don't know how you should voice it. Yeah, that's not going to work. The next thing, this is probably one of the most mind-blowing stories we've had in a while. So the guys who are doing blockchain, some of those folks are saying, because we keep going back and ninja editing what various news things are, and we can't seem to agree what facts are with the narratives over the last few months or so, why don't we put those things on the blockchain? And so if there's a story about, Washington, cow wanders into Washington, we drop that on the blockchain, and then a year from now, if we're arguing about that, it's actually part of the encrypted record. Go back and pull that rascal up.
Because we're not already burning enough electricity on questionable funding, fund strategies. Anyway, yeah, why not?
It's going to be blockchain, all blockchain, all the time.
Yeah.
That's
the way we're going.
$2 trillion right now. And the economy is $2 trillion for various forms of cryptocurrency.
Nerd Roundup will be blockchain.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be one of the leaders.
There we go.
It will be.
Somebody was saying about a year ago that, Bitcoin would be useful to use as a hard drive. God knows how many cycles it would take to put your stuff on there, but it's everybody would keep a copy for you.
I don't see how that could go wrong at all.
No.
Yeah, so this is
encrypted at rest, that's all.
Yeah, this kind of blew my mind because I'm like, who decides which facts go on there, and then who decides if the words are the same a year later? If they, I just see there's lots of options.
Yeah, I don't see any problems. There's no way that could go wrong at all.
Yeah, It's the thing you keep reading online is a tech guy's going, we just need to know the truth. It's like, have you been in the world for longer than a day or so? Because
it doesn't always matter.
I can't. If you have kids, I can't get the truth from two kids out of what happened 5 minutes ago. There's a lot of ambiguity, subjectivity there. That's just the blockchain's not going to fix being a human. And we're hung for a second. Hopefully, you guys will come back. During this intermission, I will now be humming a song. All right, down. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
No, I guess not.
There you are. You're back.
I'm back. Okay.
Hey.
Made it back.
I'm got to bring some toothpaste or something so when it drops, I can, like, hey, have you tried Crest?
A little stand in advertisement. The rodeo clown.
Yeah. Oh, like the old days. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So the next story is the moon's top layer alone has enough oxygen to sustain 8 billion people for 100,000 years.
Good.
Yeah.
Who tested that hypothesis?
It's on the internet. It must be. We need to put this on the blockchain because it must be true.
Yeah, it must be true.
It's all silicates, right? Just pull the silicon out, pull the other metals out, get the oxygen.
Really? Oh, and the cool thing is you could attach like a big hose.
Yeah.
As it goes around the world, you just keep getting different oxygen to the different parts of the world.
Giant moon hose.
All the carbon dioxide on the earth and send it to the moon.
Somebody said that's going to be the problem. I was reading on the tech forum that the carbon dioxide handling that is actually going to be a bigger problem than finding oxygen.
Actually, interestingly enough, though, I seen rumor both Heinlein and Ben Bova wrote a fair bit about doing that sort of a thing, yeah, going to the moon and mining this, you know, all the silicates and, you know, I think Bova got in a little more detail than Heinlein did, but they were both, you know, roughly the same.
You guys remember, it wasn't 20, 30 years ago that the moon was supposed to be an arid desert devoid of anything at all you could ever use for life. And now we got water, we got carbon dioxide, we got all kinds of cool stuff.
Well, yeah, well, frankly, how hard could it be to convert cheese into oxygen, though?
Good point.
Wemsleydale.
Right, really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Wemsleydale cheese, right?
Some color of green.
Yeah.
You guys, do you know the Monty Python cheese shop sketch, right?
Or the Wallace and Gromit's, my reference.
Yeah, sure. The cheese shop, John Cleese walks in, and Eric Idle, or Michael Palin, is behind the counter, and he continues to ask for various forms of cheese, and that guy goes, well, maybe we have this, and no matter what he asks for, he never has it, so he finally shoots the guy. Funny sketch.
As most Monty Python is.
Yeah. They were reasonably funny.
Yeah, they're just kind of lucky. I watched the making of kind of Python. They're like, you know, we're just kind of right guys at the right time, and it worked out. Probably could never do that again.
Yeah.
Hunt sounds like the Agile Manifesto.
Exactly.
I like the manifesto better than the practices. None of it's really bad, but it's just sort of like, wow, common sense. Yeah.
That's uncommon.
That was uncommon. Yeah, it looked to me like, okay, you got a bunch of guys know what they're doing. What's the sort of minimum thing you can put together that everybody would agree on?
Bunch of modelers. Yeah, what's the basic gist that bubbled out? What's the abstraction of all these techniques? Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, cool. Somebody wrote that down. The hunt for Earth's deep hidden oceans. So I'm thinking, and this is a faith-based assumption here, I've read several articles over the last several years, I think there's more water under the surface of the Earth in the mantle than there is in the oceans of the Earth. And we're finding more and more evidence that might be the case.
I know under, like, Greenland and stuff like that, right, there's just a shit ton. Maybe it's not a technical term.
It could be too shit.
I understood it.
But is it a metric shit ton or a total shit ton?
Wow.
Is there a difference?
Well, it's green, it doesn't have to be metric, would it?
T-O-N-N-E, no less.
Yeah. Oh, the French version. Yes, okay.
Much more than a buttload, it would be a whole shit ton. So this is about...
There's something about, you know, the fluidity of the mantle, right? The circulation of the mantle generating the magnetic field, and that would be impossible if there weren't a certain amount of moisture content.
Yeah, and this, by the way, I'm not talking about lizard men living inside a hollow earth. This would be water embedded in, like, rock at extremely high pressures and temperature.
Well, it could be, you know, Godzilla. If you watch the Godzilla movies, they're pretty clear that there's tunnels through, and there is water, and that, you know, there's other big monsters, not just Godzilla, like Mothra and others. So that has to be true.
And a source of light in the sky.
Yeah.
Mothra won over Godzilla. Am I correct that Mothra actually kicked Godzilla's ass? Or
I think they fought to a standstill, didn't they? And then, I don't remember.
Yeah, all I know is that for a long time, I always thought of Japanese people as going, ah, running down the street. And it turns out most of them are not like that. that was very heartening to hear that. It was... Next
I still remember being surprised to learn that the North and South Poles have shifted over the gazillion years.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what? How's that happen?
Next time that happens, that's not going to be fun for the humanoids.
And for the aircraft flying.
Well, for our toys, it won't be fun, and then that won't be fun for the humans. But what could go wrong? Well, the good thing, though, is the sun cycle. We're in sun cycle 25 now, and that's apparently heating up. And if you want to get really nerdy, the Russians nailed this one. So apparently... in the 50s and 60s, there was a great hullabaloo over the sun cycles, and the Americans thought there was this regular cycle, which there was. But the Russians said, well, no, but there's a super cycle, which knocks out the occasional normal sun cycle, which it did. So it knocked out, I think it was 23 and 24 or something. I can't remember. But recently, the sun cycle has been off, and it was because the Russian math worked out, because they had surmised that there was this super cycle going on, and sure enough, it's happened. So what should happen in this sun cycle is it's going to get nastier than usual, just because it is what it is. And it's looking as if it's getting nastier.
Stronger. So more sunspots?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you happen to like, you know, GPS and things like that, you might want to be...
careful.
Or cancer, CME, you know, some kind of wad of protons flying toward the Earth that happens.
Yeah, what could happen? What could go wrong?
Well, maybe this the Russians being more accurate this time is making up for that whole like Gregorian calendar, Julian calendar problem.
Yeah.
Well, screwed us in the 1820s.
Yeah. No, but basically they just had more data. Was what it got. They had longer data. You know, like a longer time period of data.
Wasn't there a movie like Solar Attack where we had to blow the sun up for some reason? I can't remember. It's not a high quality.
That's an interesting concept.
It's already on, how do you blow the sun up? It's already on.
Yeah, I think one atomic bomb ought to do it.
That
makes about sense.
Yeah, guess you could.
No, no, I think
you could drop enough antimatter down in there. You could blow it up with, and you could blow it up with mass. I guess if you drop the like Betelgeuse on top of it, you could. Supernova,
well,
right?
You'd have to move Betelgeuse.
If we're going to build a tube around the moon, I don't see why we can't move Betelgeuse around.
After all, Betelgeuse is just a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll stay up more than once.
And, you know, she's supposed to be huge, but in the movie, he looked really small, so I think the astronomers are probably lying to us about that.
He was Batman, so...
That's true. That's true.
Oh, my goodness. Batman. Wow. And he's also in Hulu's Dope Sick, which is really good. I've been watching that last month or so.
Oh, is that good? I saw it advertised.
It was written by a local newspaper reporter, the book, and adapted. Michael Keaton picked it up and adapted it into a series. Not a happy kind of thing, but it was good.
No, didn't look happy.
So this next article, I have not read at all. Has anybody read the next article? Okay. But it's got a really cool, the title is A New Theory for Systems That Defy Newton's Third Law. And it's got a really cool picture of like a little robot on the front. So I'm like, hey, I probably want to read that, but I never did.
Cool.
Okay, great.
So, but sadly, because the FBI site is currently down, nobody's going to enforce Newton's Third Law, which is what the real issue is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The
cops are not doing their jobs.
Who do you call, right? Who do you
call?
Someone's violating third law.
Well, I think we just have to all choose to be non-Newtonian fluids. We need to choose to be non-Newtonian fluids. Then we can defy the third law.
Or non-Euclidean. Yeah, sure. I don't know why we have to put up Newton anyway. This guy's like 400 or 500 years ago, you know? Who's he to tell us what we can do? So speaking of who's anybody to tell anybody else what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Oh, the Russians!
Russia blows up a satellite, creating a dangerous debris cloud.
Yeah, that wasn't polite. That was not polite.
People in the space shuttle
what happens to intersect with the ISS.
What a quinky-dink.
And the Russians today said, hey, no big deal. We did that, but sure, nobody was ever in danger at all. Because we're Russians.
Problem.
Remember that sun thing we were right about? Hey, we can blow stuff up. Nobody's going to be here.
We, you know, a little cloud of debris, you know, moving at, what, 10 or 15 kilometers per second relative velocity that just happens to intersect the orbit of the ISS. What could go wrong?
I guess they don't have any of their cosmonauts on there right now.
I don't think they care if they do.
Probably. They might care more than China, just saying.
There's a picture online. I don't have it right now, but it's a half ounce of, I was like, 20, 30 grams of plastic hitting a big blob of aluminum at orbital speeds, and it looks like a hand grenade or something. It's just incredible
amount
of damage.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bit of energy when things are going at 15 kilometers a second.
It's that V-squared factor in there that does the damage.
Yeah, M times V, yeah.
Back to that stupid Newton.
Oh, well.
Dang it.
That's Newton. What the heck is going on here?
It seems like I keep coming back to this guy. Yeah.
Should we not defy him?
Yeah.
I don't see the problem.
Let's cancel. We can cancel Newton.
Cancel. Yeah.
Well, just back to this, there's a little call out. We are actively working to characterize a debris field. So imagine, hey, Boris, this will be fun. We'll create like about a million particles for them to try to track. Let's see how long it takes.
Well, what, is there an estimate of the number of parts? It's got to be thousands, right?
It'd
be
like bolts. I saw 1,500. This less than 1,500. I'm sure it's more.
1,500 that have been tracked.
Yeah, that are big enough to be tracked, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little more interested in the bolts that are going 15 kilometers a second. That's just it's not going to go well.
Maybe you can put up a giant, like, fan.
There it is. I like
this
idea.
This is why we have programmers on there.
Oxygen from the moon.
Great. Oxygen from the moon to give it something to blow. Because
there you go. We're going to turn the moon into a great big gas source.
So, as you know, the atmosphere does not end any sort of given spot. So the atmosphere sort of continues out, even up to lunar heights. So these things will come down due to atmosphere drag. I think it's like 5 to 10 years, so it's not going to be forever. Worth asking.
Nothing is.
Geocentric orbit. The Voyager's not never going to come back. I know that. Not unless the Klingons pick it up again.
Yeah.
So these guys, Hacker News posted another list of all the things, and this is just kind of like a gee whiz, what the fuck, dudes. Actually, this is more of a what the actual fuck kind of moment. Big list of Russian apartment bombings, poisoned a guy with nuclear radiation in a NATO country, chemical attacks in a NATO country. It's just...
This is like in the last week or two? Or
it's the last like, time frame. It's a huge list of shit you're not supposed to do that they did, and everybody's like, hey, we're really angry with you now. I'm running in. Here's a letter. Ooh, a lot of invective.
Yeah.
Strong letter.
Bad Russians. Bad Russians.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you do about them, but I know that if they were a child, they would be like, they're crying out for attention. They just want somebody, you know, come pay attention to them. So if you're interested in this satellite thing, there's a thing called the Kessler Syndrome.
Yeah.
And it is all about, we're going to end up with so much stuff bouncing around in orbit that we can't launch things into orbit.
Yeah, it's bad news.
And it may have already begun. The thing is, it's not a yes or no situation. It's just more of a, once the risk at some point is going to get so bad that you're not going to be able to launch. And so who knows when that moment will arrive, because it'll also cascade. Once you reach a certain point, the things will like bounce off of one another.
Which we saw in the movie Gravity.
Gravity, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollywood
is just
Hollywood
like that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
They're on the blockchain, so they're not going to allow those of any.
Well, the thing I liked about Gravity, though, was how all the debris basically stayed in a cloud, and kept and was phenomenally accurate. I that was impressive. It didn't disperse, and it just kept around every like hour and a half or something.
Yep. In other words, it started like this and went to like this, and then just kept.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you could see the parts coming by.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you can see
them maybe 200 miles an hour. Oh, look, it's coming. You know what you could do? You could go over to the Chinese station. You can see it right over there. Just go
because they're next door. Right?
Just get into this capsule that you don't know how to fly. Right? And then just go over there. And then while you're doing that, you can curl up into the shape of a fetus.
It was nowhere realistic as Armageddon, say. That was the most
realistic. No, nowhere near as realistic as Armageddon.
Yeah. So maybe I shouldn't go watch Gravity. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, you definitely should. It's actually, it's got these moments that are just spectacular as far as the anti-gravity or the non-gravity effects, the zero gravity effect. And then it's just really stupid.
Yeah. You gotta, there needs to be a suspension of belief on this one. But actually, it's one of the few 3D movies that I actually like the 3D in.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of patience for 3D. I just don't. But it was pretty darn good.
Okay.
I want to like 3D. It's just, it seems like kind of more of a hassle now.
It's too hacky. There's always the cheese ball, this comes at you. Yeah. It's like, we don't need that. Come on. It's 1950s crap. Give me a break.
Did you guys ever watch Second City Television back in the day? John
many,
Candy.
Many years ago.
John Candy, yeah.
John Lovitz.
And Martin Short.
Martin Short. Oh, much of guest star. They did this 3D theater where they would always go, and they would always make fun of the 3D.
It's totally realistic.
The last story is a story deep and near to my heart. The Commandant of the Marine Corps for the last several years has been saying, guys, we need to do something different because we're just looking like the Army. We got tanks, we're over in Iraq, and we're doing stuff the Army does, and we don't want to be the Army because they'll just get rid of us. Not in so many words. He said it's much more eloquent when he said it. And so they're going back to their naval roots, they're going to do island hopping, they're getting rid of all the tanks. So in the last week or so, he said, we want to have cyber marines empowered to act boldly. So they're talking about guys in combat coding and hacking into other systems while you're under fire. Whoa! Yeah! Wow! I thought pair programming was tough. Damn!
Shit! Yeah. Well, but having somebody that could block some of that nonsense that's going on, because you're going to get attacked, right? So somebody's going to come in with some cool cyber toys, and you've got to block that on the spot, or you got a serious issue.
That's not wrong. It's the thing. I just can't picture how this is going to work. I mean.
Okay, let me explain the military-industrial complex to you. Somebody from one of the Beltway bandits will bid on something. They will get a multi-billion-dollar contract. They'll produce about $50,000 worth of stuff. The rest of the money will go somewhere, and nothing much will come of it. Then they'll win the next bid, which will be bigger. But there'll be a different prime contractor this time, right? Because, the chair will chair the rain.
Yeah.
And that project will produce several million dollars worth of stuff for about $5 billion. And somebody will get a couple of toys to play with.
I was in a seminar once, and somebody said, hey, how do you use this tool to split? How do you split user stories? And I'll never forget that guy. Well, you just right-click on them, and there's like a little option. you've explained it perfectly, Scott. At the same time, you explained nothing at all.
Yeah.
So on the topic of coding Marines, I read a book a long time ago. It was called A Web of Angels. And this is before the World Wide Web was even close. But it described an intergalactic computer network, and they'd solved the speed of light problem, of course. And then the main character was a programmer who had been taken as a young child by a guru who taught him the true meaning of computer programming. They called it the fifth literacy.
Wow.
And he would train to do exactly what you're talking about. He would code in the midst of an attack. And he was trained to be able to do this sometimes by taking two pair wires and tapping them together in binary.
So he was like MacGyver.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm thinking like a whole new series of like kung fu movies, except for the guys like the little wires and
But really, when you think about it, how hard could it be, right? Like every movie I've ever seen, all you've got to do, some kid will go to a computer, type. Suddenly, they've broken into the FBI, which is exactly what happened 2 weeks ago, and they saved the world. So really, like, wouldn't it be the same?
Enter the test harness. Yeah, I guess there's some stuff here. There was
what was the John Travolta movie where he made something?
Yeah. A swordfish. Swordfish. Yeah, they had a gun. They had a gun to his head.
Yeah, and a girl.
Right? They were messing around with Wolverine. So they have a gun to Wolverine's head. He's got like 90 seconds to break into some bank or something.
He just types faster.
While the...
Yeah, oh, yeah, and they had... Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
So they had... There's a clip we did a few months back. There was a TV show or a movie that had sky hacking. He had to hack in, he was under a time limit. And so somebody else came beside him, and they both were typing on the keyboard at the same time. It's like four hands on one keyboard, just to make it look like they were like going faster. Like, wow, that's...
Because that's what you would do. That's what pair programming is.
Yeah. If you could do like four hands on one keyboard, you got this whole programming thing nailed.
Yeah.
And the mob programming is like a major assault.
You'd be like 20 hands on one key.
Every person has one key.
Where's the other guy?
Yeah. And they're sitting there with their phones. I've got the A key. Okay, A. Oh. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, the guy in charge has semicolons. So you'd be the one guy
ahead. Be the most important guy, though.
You might need to have some parallel, multiple certain keys. Need multiple people.
You're thinking way ahead of this. Yeah, sure. And I think there should be an app that has you can assign different keys. We're onto this thing with the prime contractor already. So you got the app, you got different keys. Pull that on the iPhone. There was a story that I didn't get to bring up this morning from the U.S. Naval Institute by a Coast Guard lieutenant guy won the Fulbright Award. And his point was basically, we're building all these ships using monolithic software systems. And that's really stupid, because the whole damn ship going to go down instead of having isolated systems that each person can work on. And I thought it was a very smart thing for him to say, except the problem is, that's easy to say, it's actually kind of difficult to pull off.
Well, it's just programming airline.
Yes! That's not a bad idea.
Okay, so once again, you put in an RFP, several of the beltways are already
I don't know where we got off. Yeah, Scott, you're right. See, this is what we have the Canadian on, because they know these things about things.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not immune to this disease. No. Yeah, it's bureaucracies. Like, when I was doing DoD consulting, exactly as Mr. Ambler described it, but not really, because that's where I came up with more agile ideas, was because I'm a taxpayer, damn it. It's stupid to not try to get value out of it. Anyway, the one thing that we would do near the end of the fiscal year is go ask our customers for use it or lose it money, because we could stash it. And then that way their budget wouldn't be decreased next year, because this is the stupidity. If you want to know why FedZilla is bigger than Godzilla and Murtha, or whoever the hell. And that was actually one of the guys that kept bringing money back to Pennsylvania, Murtha. Because of the use it or lose it. Because if you didn't use it, either because you were wise or because maybe you estimated wrong, then you wouldn't get money next year. And then your little empire would get smaller. And then so the incentives for the government, at least when I was in it, was to constantly use your budget and grow. So there's no feedback loop.
So I'm a history buff, and I think one of the most amazing stories along the lines of what you're saying is the fact that the U.S. military over and over again falls into this pattern of being a bunch of sort of obsolete people with a bunch of corruption and spending money, and yet somehow we fall into a war and figure it all out as we go. And it's, I think when they started World War II, they were relieving generals because the generals insisted that ships be big enough for the horses to go on. They're like, no, we don't do no horses no more. And it's just this whole, somehow we managed that gap. I'm not sure we'll do it in the future, but it's this amazing. How did it, it worked over and over again that way.
I think what you're saying is that we need a war.
Well, no, I think he's saying that when it happens, we get our shit together pretty fast, despite the stupidity that is the general status quo.
So there's a great book called The Generals, if you guys are interested in organization. I know you are, organization systems and how they work. And the premise of The Generals is that the way we've been operating in World War II was, if you're a general, well, guess what? We've never had generals before. So you're not really expected to do a good job because we don't know what that job is. And so they would just relieve you on the spot. Hey, dude, you're a great guy. Go do something else because you're not a good general. And you weren't fired. It was just, hey, you're not the guy for this job. We don't know what the job is, but we know you're not it. And what happened by the time we got to Vietnam was we set up the war college and all this other stuff. So now the system is considered to know how these things work. And they don't relieve people anymore because you're sanctioned by the system. You must know how to do this, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, let's not get down that, go down that path. But yeah, the whole military industrial complex, as Dwight Eisenhower warned us about, not to mention General Washington warned us about a two-party system. So it's not like we don't know better, but we're just, we don't know better.
This is by the way, this week was the anniversary of My Lai in Vietnam, total horrible massacre that a young lieutenant, a helicopter pilot, actually put his helicopter between the service members in the village to try to prevent them from shooting the villagers, and nobody went to jail on that. I think he was actually reprimanded for it. That was probably one of the biggest heroes to come out of Vietnam, and he was a hero because he was like, guys, we're doing the wrong thing. This is awful. Stop this. We do a good job eventually. What does somebody say the Americans do a good job once they've exhausted every other way of doing
all their options? Yeah, pretty much.
God has a special dispensation for drunkards, dogs, and the United States of America. It's a quote by some German royal guy 100 years ago.
Like a Kaiser? Yeah.
Yeah, some guy or somebody like that.
So during the War of 1812, where the Canadians kicked our ass a little bit, there was a guy in Appalachia. Yeah, a little bit. The burning of the White House. There was a guy in Appalachia who was told, hey, we're going to have this big battle down in New Orleans. You should show up. And so he runs on foot from Kansas, Tennessee, all the way down. He runs all the way there. And he gets there. It's over. I think he shot somebody maybe when he got there. And then he ran all the way back. And it's like, wow, I can't go to the mailbox without pulling a muscle. This guy went 800 miles. It's like, shit.
That's what you'll do for a little excitement back in those days.
Yeah, well, you live in the woods long enough, you're looking to run as far. Yeah, get the hell out of there.
Oh, my God, I think there might be a battle 1,000 miles away. I could run it.
Yeah.
It's either that or grow really friendly with bears, one of those two things. You don't want to go the other way.
Yeah, you never know. He could have turned the tide of battle. He could have shown up at the exactly right moment.
Yeah, shot the high-value target.
Yeah.
It seems like I heard the story that I kind of dialed it back because that's the way I actually heard the story. But I was through somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. So take it with a grain of salt. What have you guys been consuming over the last week? Any TV shows, books, anything like that?
Well, I believe I'm the only person on the planet that likes the Foundation TV series.
Oh, yeah.
I call me old fashioned, but it would have been nice if they'd read the books.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I stopped watching.
Yeah. It's like every third episode is pretty darn good. And as long as you don't actually want a story that's anywhere remotely close to the books, it's not that. Visually, it's awesome.
Great sales pitch.
Yeah, as long as you don't like stories or anything near the book.
Yeah, no, it's like the thing, I don't know, it's just visually, it's awesome. It's a beautiful TV series, but I think if they get a second season, I think they need to hire a couple of writers. and maybe a couple of readers. And they could nail the first. I think they could nail the first book in the second season if they were to actually read it. It is possible, but we'll have to see.
Well, the J.J. Abrams theory of remakes, reboots of the first series.
Yeah, yeah. Or I don't know. It's just, what are you going to do? It's...
Yeah, I have been, since we dropped John for a second, I've been reading this audiobook called Wolf Hall. It's about Cromwell in England in 1500 and the English Reformation. And I was interested in that because that was the kind of the one moment when the Catholic Church started losing hold over England and the king took over the church. And that seemed like to be kind of a major deal for Europe. And it is an interesting story. I've also been watching Narcos, which is really cool. And that the dope set. So. Mr. John, what have you been up to?
I don't know. Just went out into space somewhere.
Well, I mean, what have you been reading lately? Not where you're going right now.
Reading.
Reading, watching. You said you did some stuff with programming.
Oh. Yeah, well, I was talking a little bit about Polynode, which is a organizational network analysis tool that you can use to kind of maybe structurally evaluate your gut that might says the system is siloed and you can see it. You can do things to understand the network and how people communicate and how information flows. You could use it for targeted situations regarding maybe, hey, we want to not replace, but just succession planning or something like that. Who might do Joe's work or something like that and get some. Anyway, it's a interesting way to. It uses like directed graphs and nodes and edges, and you know, so it looks a lot like a touch graph, or you know, you can see things spin around. You can size things based on attributes that you care about, and you can tell who's a hub. Oh, look at that. Everybody talks to Sally.
So
what the heck?
Knowledge management type thing? Because we've been beating on that drum for a long while.
No, I think it's a little bit more about trying to understand the fact that even you might have an org hierarchy, but it really works like this. You know, like the CEO really only talks to these two people. And this one person he talks to, who's down somewhere in the chart, actually has the most connections to other people. So, you know, it's... And then that probably corroborates it. Oh, yeah, everybody knows Cole. Yeah, Cole's like, he's been here 30 years. He knows every part of the business. He knows how to do the exploration and the mining and the this. And, right, everybody talks. So, anyway, it's an interesting tool that the reason we're looking at it and have been using it is when going into certain organizations, if you can kind of get a peek at not only how they tell you they function, but how they really function.
It's so. Are they any emails, or what are they? Where do they get this data from?
There is a combination of you can send out an active questionnaire to target the types of information you're looking for, or passive and or, like you can back that up with passive Slack, Teams, email, calendars, right? And you can kind of see all, you know, that gets into even crazier stuff because you can go, look at that. There's all this chatter going on when someone's in a meeting because it's a shit meeting probably. I mean, you can kind of look at it from funny perspectives to say, you know, who usually talks to who, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Hang on. I got to take this call. But anyway, that's what I'm doing.
So basically all the privacy laws are thrown out and we've got to be quite excited.
What privacy laws? Did Newton come up with these things? I don't think so.
Huh?
Yeah. Hi, John.
Yeah, hey, John, come back.
Yeah, no, you had to take a call.
Bob, yeah. How about yourself? Sure. What's been happening? What's up?
Oh, gosh, I've just been goofing around with Clojure and doing my Space War game and a few other things. I was watching the Rittenhouse trial just before I went on this call with you guys. And the defense has decided that they want to file for or move for a mistrial with prejudice, which means they could never try him again. And the basis of this is the drone video. And the drone video was apparently given to the prosecutor. And the prosecutor then airdropped it or emailed it over their phone to the defense, and the defense got a compressed version of it. And somehow in that transformation, somehow as they moved the file from one phone to another, it got compressed. And of course, the prosecution is going, oh, we didn't know it would get compressed. And the defense is saying, those guys cheated. They compressed the file. Very, very interesting. And it exposed this idea that these people who are, you know, holding people's lives in their hand and they're dealing with, you know, real evidence have no idea how this technology works or what a video file is or what happens to a video file if you happen to send it through email. So I thought that was pretty cool. And the judge is sitting there going, oh, you know, what the hell am I supposed to do now? And these guys are all arguing back and forth. And none of them have any idea, right, of what's really
happening. I'm just thinking there's nobody there with a clue.
No. And one of the lawyers says, well, I don't know how to use AirDrop. I don't know what AirDrop is.
Yeah. Well, then imagine explaining this to the jury.
There was a moment in the trial where they brought up a picture and they zoomed in. And the defense goes, wait a minute, you can't zoom in.
Oh, yeah, they pitched something. What?
And they had to have an expert come in to describe what happens to the pixels as you zoom in. Where do those pixels come from? Well, we have an algorithm. Well, what do you mean you have an algorithm? Is there data in there? No.
Well, we can make it look like there's data. Would you like to pretend like there's data? Because we can do that. Amazing.
Okay, but wait, hang on here. We need to get back to the important topic. So space war. Is that like, are you redoing the original game that was like on the PDP-8 or whatever it was?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you not know how to focus on the important things?
I have no problem focusing on the important things.
Because if your shields are out, you're just going to have a hard time with the Klingons. It's not going to work.
Yeah, I'm
trying to figure out, you know, how often should a Romulan come in and just blast everything?
No, it's a little dot, man. Oh, you're moving dots around the screen. Come on.
Yeah.
Remember shooting the phasers like photon pieces will appear to go out. Oh, that was fun.
Yeah. do you have like a real CRT, like an old CRT, and like how do you?
Oh no, I'm doing it on my laptop. This is a modern rendition of an old game. Yeah. So it's all written in Clojure, and it all runs in Java. You know, it's
okay. So it's not real. Okay.
You know, an Apple One sold for, was it $800,000 a week or two ago?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It must have still been functioning.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, it's a piece of money, and just put some 8-bit graphics on there, maybe some MIDI files background. You could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, some of these older machines are, you know, like certainly Apple One is gold, but. There's some old Atari demo machines, beta machines they built, like the 1450, and it's worth. There's only two of them. two of them survived, and they're worth $30,000 or $40,000 the last time they came up, and that was a few years ago now. So I bet you they're over 100.
I saw this thing where this guy took a big piece of plywood, I mean like a 32-foot by 8-foot piece of plywood. And built a 5502 processor using discrete components. It was like a huge processor, and you could code it and see how the things work with LEDs. It was really, really cool.
That would be cool. You'd have to have a lot of time in your hands, but that would be cool.
Well, you know.
people have a lot of time.
Didn't you restore a PDP-11 or something a few years ago? I seem to remember hearing you were doing that or thinking about that. Or was that?
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, a PDP-8.
The PDP-8, which is what Space War ran on originally, wasn't it?
Originally, long, long ago.
Yeah, yeah. With
the vector graphics display, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I never got it working. I'm not smart enough. Now it sits in my office and I look at it longingly, but I can't make it work. I bought a lot of electronic equipment. I bought oscilloscopes and voltmeters, and I went in there and tried to fiddle with it. And then in the end, I thought, I think I'd rather write Space War.
Yeah. There'd be some truly ancient components in there that.
There are. No integrated circuits. It's all transistors and resistors. Yeah. It's all
And you know, and all it would take is one of the, you know, thousands probably, and you're all, it's all over.
Yeah, well, and the real tricky part there is the core memory. It's locked away in a nice little black box that I don't dare open.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, right? Just opening some of this old crap blows him. It's like, that's it. Something shorted. Good luck.
I think I'd want there to are like, not. A box, like a System 36 or if I were doing this, I think that PDPH is a little too far back. Maybe something a multi-user type, like I said, a VAX, a System 36, something like that.
Yeah.
You can understand a PDP-8.
Yeah.
You can fit it in your head. Right. A VAX, I'm not so sure you can.
Yeah, good point. That's what I loved about that guy with the plywood thing. Is like you can write the code to do whatever kind of game you want, and you can actually watch the code work. Wow, that's really cool. So, guys, let me do my end of show kind of thing. Hang on. And you've wasted yet another hour of your precious time hanging out with us. You could have been watching the new series Foundation. You could have been watching a bunch of other stuff. You could have been reading books. You could have become a neurosurgeon. But no, you're hanging out with us, and we're happy to have you. I'm Daniel Markham. I will see you on the internet.